to another Chatting with Ingram. Now, today I'm talking to Ian Thornton Trump. I'll let him introduce himself in a little bit more detail in a moment, but he is the CISO with Syjax. I always like saying CISO with Syjax. That sort of trips off the tongue quite nicely. And we're going to look at what Syjax can do to provide support for decision makers across industry. Ian, can you introduce yourself to those that are listening today?
Sure. Well, thank you very much for having me. I've been involved in the security community for probably close to 20 years, sometimes in uniform, sometimes out of uniform. Spent the last 5 years here in the UK working for a number of businesses and organizations. Basically, I'm all about creating an intelligence capability within the organization to essentially prevent very bad things from happening to that organization. And I'm very happy to say that the organizations I have worked with, I was able to convince that this is an important component. Not all organizations, though, have embraced it to the extent that they should. And if that's an allusion to my former service with SolarWinds, then certainly I think you can take that one away for now. But I think, you know, for me and where I feel the industry is headed right now is we need to start looking for things that can give us an advantage over malicious actors and cyber criminals. And I truly believe that intelligence and actionable, timely, and accurate information is probably the key.
Now, it's interesting to say that. You know, we're both from intelligence backgrounds in the military, and therefore we're used to intelligence enabling decision makers to make their decisions. But do you think from a business perspective that CEOs, managing directors and all the rest of it understand the power of intelligence? Do they have the same view of it as we do?
You know, I think it varies considerably. I certainly see in the banking and financial industry a desire for and certainly a use of intelligence products to guide decision making at the highest levels of the organization, directing, you know, investments, anti-fraud and money laundering efforts, and those kind of things. Maybe it's a little bit because there's a bunch of compliance and regulation that is providing oversight. But also, I think that there's an emerging case that says there's an advantage to being able to sidestep an impactful cyber attack, or there's an advantage to know what type of perils are out there and how other organizations are facing them down or discovering the information. And I think this goes back to the idea that there is very much adversarial and contested space on the internet right now between those attempting to do business and those attempting to rip off those organizations and individuals that have a web presence. So I think when you look at the maturity level, you have on one end of the spectrum, national critical infrastructure that gleefully put a whole bunch of very vulnerable things on the internet and are now very quickly, we hope, removing them from the internet. And then we have the banking and financial industry, which I feel is sort of the tip of the spear when it comes to consuming intelligence to inform decision-making at the highest levels of the organization.
Yeah, but every organization now has, you know, with the pandemic, has got a much bigger digital footprint than they had beforehand. And it's not as secured a digital footprint as you would have if you were in your own premises through your own networks and everything else. Is that a very real threat?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the existential situation that we found ourselves in with either we open up and allow for collaboration and information sharing for our staff in a work from home capacity, or we have to significantly downgrade the business's revenue opportunities, was a very difficult call to make. And I think, you know, when you think about, you know, the realities of the economy and GDP and preservation of the jobs, the needle pointed towards get it done as opposed to get it done safely. And I think now, as we begin to emerge and our economy comes back online, we sort of have to look at, broad changes that we made and go, okay, maybe we need to look at technology investments. Maybe we need to look at fixing some of these things that, you know, we initially did to facilitate the survival of the company and, of course, the continued employment of people. So some organizations, I think, were prepared for this digital transformation. Other organizations were completely blindsided by it and found it incredibly challenging to scale, to meet that work from home requirement.
Well, one of the things I see continuously is people understand their physical exposure. So they know when to put a lock of a certain type on a door. They know when to lock a document into a safe and not just a filing cabinet. Do you think that people have got that same understanding of their digital exposure? And how exposed do you think businesses are in today's world?
Yeah, that's a super good question. I think the problem with IT and technology systems is they're made of all of these layers that are usually separately managed within the organization, which creates silos of communication. And so as an example, when you think about what a modern IT system looks like, right, it's the physical hardware, then it's the hypervisor that runs on top of that hardware, and then it's the presentation, if you will, enabling layer, be it, you know, something like Apache Struts or, you know, Internet Information Services. And then on top of that, you actually have the code that you have created to fulfill that business, product, or service. So when you have these multi-layers of vulnerability and multi-layers of management, you need the whole picture in order to even think about securing it. You know, having secure code running on a vulnerable operating system is just as bad as having a secure operating system that's running vulnerable code. So all of these things need to be in harmony, and all of these things need to be understood. And from an intelligence perspective, that's exactly what intelligence should be looking at and should be providing to the organization, is a comprehensive view of what the vulnerability landscape looks like, matched to the actual exposed infrastructure that organization has. There is some, I would say, intelligence value of knowing what's going on with your neighbors and knowing what's going on at, you know, in other countries, but it needs to be contextualized. And if you do have Apache, for instance, in your organization, and you can, and you know that it's exposed to the internet, then when an Apache remote code execution bug is identified, then you know that it needs to be repaired with some sense of urgency. But if you're overwhelmed with information that doesn't have any context behind it, it's just noise. And what we do is we end up ignoring it to our own peril if we don't quite understand that, hey, this information was relevant to me and here's why.
Yes, you need to know what you need to know. And therefore, it's, you're working out that question is one of the hardest pieces that's in there. But correct me if I'm wrong, that's what Sygex does. Sygex comes and helps companies understand where their critical business practices are, what their critical business information is, and all the rest of it, and therefore what the potential threat is to the disruption of that business, do you not?
Yeah, precisely. I would say, you know, if you ask yourself, you know, why we do what we do, it's ultimately to take the fight to the malicious actors and nation state actors that are trying to disrupt our digital economy. That's sort of the broad steps. But when you look at what makes up that digital economy and what is important to an organization, you have to really step back and say, we see attacks, some are malicious, some are incredibly stealthy against organizations, but that information can be overwhelming. You know, we know that there's, thousands of compromised computers, if not tens of thousands compromised computers running bot armies The real question is how susceptible are you to that type of attack? So as an example, when we see a bunch of people, you know, with the recent exchange of vulnerabilities, we see that there are servers out on the internet that are vulnerable. We urge people that they should be patched and updated. But we don't know is whether or not they have some sort of compensating control that we can't see, right? So one of the things that becomes very important, and this is, I think, has been a key issue with cyber defense in general, is the exceptional cases and the mitigating circumstances that your infrastructure might prevent an cyber attack just because of the way it's been built. So as an example, there are certain attacks that target, you know, Apache. We'll pick on them for a little bit, but only if that Apache service is running as root on the machine, but yet if it is running in a context of a user provisioned with the minimum amount of permissions, the attack won't be effective against that machine. And that's not something that we can innately see in the organization. So this is why intelligence at the broad level is fairly useful, but when it is contextualized about the uniqueness of organizations, and let's face it, most organizations are unique from an internal management perspective. You need an organization that truly understands the nuance and truly understands the importance of the kind of information that is out there on the internet when it comes to cyber attacks.
And the kind of information that a company is holding so that you can, when you're producing your threat documents and your threat assessments, understand what the more likely vectors are that are coming into that that organization. What are the big issues that are out there at the moment? And you know, almost as an addendum, do you think that part of the problem is whenever companies are trying to look at their cyber vulnerabilities and their online vulnerabilities, is that as a cybersecurity community, we geekize everything a bit too much. We've got lots of cries that we put out, and we talk about our botnets, we talk about our APTs, we talk about everything else, and actually it's not really clear to people who are just focused on getting their what they need to do within their business out, and therefore we're part of the problem.
Yeah, in a sense, I mean, you know, marketing is designed to and sales of cybersecurity is really designed to elicit, you know, a buying response. So in sometimes I would say that the fear, uncertainty, and doubt tactic can be overwhelming for an organization. And I think, you know, certainly you can't have an effective intelligence program if it's built on fear, uncertainty, and doubt as opposed to actual fact. I think that it is a concern of where we are right now because of the two issues that you brought up. One is the IT sprawl that happened as a result of the existential threats to businesses and the desire to be able to remote work and still create value and keep employees employed. The second issue, I think, really comes when we now looked at our legacy tech stack, and that the projects that were going to happen that have been stopped have pushed that needle back. You know, so as an example, we saw recently a vulnerability that actors are exploiting in the Fortinet series of VPN appliances. We don't know exactly what that looks like. And I think we're struggling a bit in terms of doing those impact assessments because there's levels of maturity. And I think, you know, if you're going to have a sophisticated intelligence offering and the organization doesn't know what to do with that information or how to turn it into action, then there needs to be a lot of education work done in order to say, yes, at this particular point, a interruption to the business is warranted because we have to patch this vulnerability that's under attack currently. And oh, by the way, you are susceptible to that vulnerability. And you have to do it in such a way where you're not bursting into boardrooms with your hair on fire, which unfortunately I've seen far too many IT security people go that route of being too alarmist over, you know, a situation that may have certain mitigations already available. And this really comes back to the two sort of changes in philosophy, if you will, that needed to occur. The first was we no longer can just stick something out on the internet. We know it's a hostile place. We know we need to have mitigative technologies deployed in mass sometimes. So be that load balancers, web application firewalls, least privilege and segregation as techniques to prevent, you know, a compromise of that device from running amok, if you will, in the organization. And then finally, I think we need to be able to have a better visibility on the confirmation of, you know, and detection of malicious and anomalous activity. And this is where, you know, the industry, I think, is struggling. There are some solutions out there. They're very expensive currently, but we still need that assurance piece to the business that indeed we are compliant, indeed we are secure. And I think this is the challenge of the modern age, is that the business, in order to even figure out its risk profile, has to understand and have the tools in place to measure it. And this got really complicated by the sudden, I'm going to say, jarring arrival into cloud and hosted services without the necessary security tooling in place to really get a read on, are we okay or are we not okay? There's too many blind spots now in modern infrastructure.
Yes, and with the move to, you know, cloud-based services and software as a service and all the rest of it, you're entrusting your data storage, your data processing to other people. And often you understand where the servers are physically held, but you may not know where the backup servers are held. You may not know where the email servers are, which are all likely to be different. And that, with the different legalities that there are around the world, can give you different vulnerabilities in the way in. Do you think the time has come for companies to look at protecting their critical assets, the critical digital assets, in a different way, and to assume that their networks have been compromised, and therefore build on the understanding of what those critical business assets are and provide protection focused on them, so that you can know that your critical assets haven't been compromised and forget about the network?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, we're dangerously close to uttering the word zero trust, and I've got my own opinions on that. But I feel like it's more of a holistic blend. I think that where we need to go is look at, you know, when we say the words people, process, and technology, let's go back to people for a moment and understand that if there isn't security awareness with procurement, security awareness with project management, security awareness throughout the business, and building that into the processes that the business executes, then, you know, you're kind of doomed. You can have your blinky light firewalls and your fancy EDR, but at the end of the day, people are going to still succumb to business email compromise and or supply chain issues because they onboarded a dodgy partner, potentially because you didn't do enough background research into that company. And so I think when we see just the majority of threats that are out there, we're moving actually away from the technical threat. I think what we're seeing more often is poorly and inadequately secured infrastructure, like remote desktop protocol, for instance, available to the entire world, not sequestered behind a VPN, with security degraded in order to accommodate out of support endpoints. We see this type of infrastructure gaps, which then lead to a security gap. And so I've really been, I would say, instrumental within the businesses that I've worked for in saying, hold on here. If security isn't part of the infrastructure lifecycle, the software development lifecycle, the procurement cycle, I'm basically not able to put out the fire, right? I have fires burning in all the departments, and I need to get these people and these processes aligned to securing the whole apparatus of the business rather than spending my time, you know, trying to build, you know, castles or bastions around this critical information, which, you know, is interesting because each department in the organization will have a different definition of what is critical to them. And that's, I think, the biggest problem with doing risk analysis is because there isn't, in a lot of cases, a holistic governance and risk function within, especially medium-sized businesses, that will give you that whole picture. So a lot of the time when you go to a customer and you say, I, you know, can provide you with threat intelligence, what are your crown jewels? You'll get different answers from the organization. And, you know, you then have to figure out, how do I contextualize it? Is it about, you know, the customer data that they're holding? Is it about their processes to create value and revenue? Is it about the intellectual property they might have? And if you can't establish and get agreement from the organization on what's important, well, it's going to be impossible to build an intelligence program to defend it.
So how much of protecting companies out there is down to simple things like education and doing the basics right, and how much is down to having, you know, expensive tech and tools and widgets and everything else that'll make sure your networks are as secure as possible and will alarm if something comes in that's unusual?
You know, it's totally interesting to me that, you know, this discussion continues to appear and that we are investing so much in you know, as you said, increasingly fancy and complex security technology. No one has refuted, to my knowledge, the cyber essentials studies that the UK undertook at the beginning of the introduction of cybersecurity essentials, which essentially says 85% of impactful cyber attacks can be mitigated by following the cybersecurity steps. So what I would suggest is that become a national data protection baseline to measure organizations against, incentivize the spend on cybersecurity, because we know what cleanup costs are. And all of a sudden, we may be into a new paradigm where the digital economy of the United Kingdom and our trading partners is far more secure than it is by actually incentivizing those basic hygiene and, shall we say, ensuring that if those basic hygiene requirements are not met, then their regulatory, i.e. GDPR and the ICO, can make a clear case of not meeting the minimum standard of data protection. And thus, the fine then becomes not negotiable. It becomes a strict liability situation as opposed to a debate going back and forth, because GDPR is very much nebulous when it comes to what you need in order to secure your data. All it goes really into is what happens if you don't. And so I think the actual regulatory environment, the compliance environment that we're living in, is deeply flawed because no one seems to be able to agree on what a minimum data protection standard is. We are working in a world of best practices, but clearly best practices are not getting us to the point where cybercrime is decreasing in frequency or the losses associated with it. So I think we've got a long way to go. And this is one of the key areas that I think intelligence helps in addressing, is that a change in the threat landscape or a change in a compliance regulation could have massive and far-reaching consequences for your organization. And you may be surprised to find out that you suddenly have very high risk because of either a business process, a technological blind spot, or simply not vetting your people properly enough may imperil your ability to conduct your business. So these are the kind of things that at the strategic level become very important for decision makers to understand.
Yes, the regulatory framework is interesting. And the government are working on a new online harms bill, which I think is going to have massive impacts across the way some of the major internet companies deliver what they've got, and anyone that's working with them, it's going to be even more interesting. It's interesting you talk about cyber essentials. I'm surprised that the insurance industry hasn't picked up and mandated that cyber essentials is the basic standard that companies need to achieve before they can get any form of business interruption insurance from a cyber perspective. And I suspect you possibly will see the insurance company driving those sorts of regulations. When they do, we will become much more secure. Do you think that would be a good approach?
Yeah, I mean, insurance is a very difficult place to be in right now. You have, let's say, a context of global warming and climate change. You have all of the claims arising from the pandemic. Some may be paid, some may not be paid. And then you have cyber. And all of this is combining to place huge risk and liability on insurance companies. One of the things that insurance companies realized back about 2015 and maybe a bit earlier was this idea of cyber insurance was the only double-digit growth opportunity that the insurance company has seen, right, since 1666 and the Fire of London and fire insurance. So we get to this new situation. You have a bunch of uneducated, when it comes to cyber people, probably very smart. You have no underwriting models to really inform it. So everyone was writing policies that have come back to nip them in the bud. And by means of, I don't think the insurance companies on, you know, a 10,000 per year policy would be then faced with having to pay out tens of millions of dollars in insurance back to the businesses that were victimized by a cyber attack. And we now see erosion of those relationships by claiming things like it was a nation state attack and therefore it was, you know, out of scope of your business interruption policy, et cetera, et cetera. So we are into some really difficult waters when it comes to regulatory compliance and insurance being a mechanism to get you to allow you to live risk-free. I think there is a growing amount of ire that the increase in ransomware attacks costs have been borne by insurance companies. And lastly, when egregious cyber negligence has occurred in that the organization has failed to do the bare minimum and not even meet the best practices, what we're seeing is an increased reliance on what's called subrogation claims, where an insurance company is forced to pay out a claim, but then can seek compensation from anything associated with that particular data breach. So I feel like we're going to see more aggressive insurance recovery actions through subrogation as a result of this, which could place quite a bit of a burden on that IT supply chain, which we've already seen has been under attack for some time.
Yes, the legal framework around this is fascinating. I do some work with a legal firm that specializes in cyber issues, blockchain issues, artificial intelligence issues, Internet of Things, crypto, and all the rest of it. And they're seeing a huge upturn in inquiries coming in as people try to navigate their way through this complex legal environment. So I'm the CEO of Acme Big Things. What okay. can you, OSIJAX, do for me?
Well, I mean, as CEO, I'd really like to know a couple of things. You know, what is the current state? So what I'd like to see is your last pen test or your last IT audit. What are your plans for future growth? You know, what are the annual revenues? And then I would extrapolate that you're probably spending somewhere between 60 to 70% of your revenue on your salaries of your employees. And then I'd say to you, okay, so let's talk about the cost of downtime. Let's look at the numbers. How much is 2 weeks of your business not being able to do business worth to you? And what would you be interested in paying in order to try and avoid that peril? And so get right into it and speak the business language, which is all about the numbers, right? And understand that if those numbers are not made, the CEO is answerable to his board or to his shareholders. At that point, you now have an ability to talk to that business about, so how are we going to avoid these things that are out there that could really jeopardize your ability to make those revenue numbers? And if they were to occur, the additional costs that you would face in trying then to struggle to meet those numbers post cyber attack. So it's really about having a conversation and understanding about what that business believes that its risks are, and contextualizing it in terms of what are the goals for prosperity that that business has, and pointing out that that peril can now be firmly found in a cyber attack, as opposed to the previous perils that we looked at, such as, you know, fire, flood, industrial accident, you know, malfeasance, corporate malfeasance, and things like that, which I would say 10 years ago were realistic perils for a business. And now, as a result of, you know, cybercrime's relentless attacks, now cybercrime is a major peril that businesses have to face. And the mitigation strategy for it is pretty simple. You need some competent folks to tell you what to fix, when it needs to be fixed, and how much it's going to cost. And all of those things exist out there. But whether or not the organization's leadership is open to that discussion has a lot to do with your ability to figure out what is important to that organization and how your services can protect it.
Well, yes, I'm sure we could both come up with countless examples of where people haven't invested that little bit in the preparation at the beginning, and it's cost them a hell of a lot more downstream in getting things right. Where do people go to get hold of you and to get hold of Sygex?
Well, we've got a great website, sygex.com, of course, that outlines basically what we do. And you can always hit us up at sales@sygex.com. We're very active on social media, on Twitter, and publish a weekly rundown of both geopolitical and cyber events. Our belief is that what happens across the globe will then possibly happen at the edge of your firewall due to the global trends in cybercrime. And then, of course, law enforcement's response to those threats factors heavily into the risk profile for businesses that are located and are doing business globally. So it's exciting times, and it's certainly something I believe will add tremendous value to the organization and help direct those strategic and tactical responses to an increasingly hostile internet.
Well, Ian, we're both proponents of intelligence-led operations, and therefore intelligence-led business operations are a natural flow from that. And we'd encourage anyone out there to take that intelligence-led approach and you know, speak to Ian and speak to the Sygex team because they can help. Ian, it's been a real pleasure talking to you this morning on Chatting with Ingram.
Thank you so much, Philip. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening. Please feel free to share if you like what you've heard, and I look forward to being with you next time.